Hey everyone, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 4 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. This one is an amazing one. I am extremely honored to have had a chance to sit down with Sam Jones from the Skylight Inn, as well as now Sam Jones Barbecue, both in North Carolina. He goes deeply into his family history. He comes from a barbecue family and everything that goes along with that, and the work ethic, the hours spent doing what they're doing, and the simplicity yet the complexity of everything. He has great stories, and as Billy Durney from Hometown Barbecue had mentioned to me, Sam has these like Sam Jones-isms, and you're gonna hear a lot of them peppered throughout this podcast, and they're lovely, they're wonderful. I also have a YouTube version of this. If you go to youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints, you could find that, which is really cool to get a chance. He's sitting in his workshop, tools and different things, and a safe. There's a lot of cool stuff. It's a really cool visual if you want to check it out that way. But enjoy this. I know you're going to love it. Please subscribe. I'll be adding at least one or two of these a week. Enjoy this.
Well, good Wednesday morning to you.
Same to you, my man.
How are you doing today? What's your day look like today?
My day started at about 4:15. I got up and went duck hunting with a few of my buddies from years ago, and
oh, that's nice.
Good time, yeah.
That's fine. How often do you get to hunt?
Typically, let's see here. Season just came back in last Saturday.
Okay.
So the day was my second time in the second season.
Okay.
So it's in now till the end of January.
Oh, okay. Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's probably why I started seeing you posting photos all of a sudden.
There you go. You can see a little change in lifestyle.
I definitely did. I want to know, how did you? I know you're in the barbecue family, but what's your history? Did you grew up working at Skylight Inn, right?
Yeah. So, let's see. I'm 37 years old now, and I hate to admit that. And I say that, some people think I'm 47. but anyhow, so I started at Skylight. I was probably 9 or 10 years old, typically just cleaning tables, clearing tables. Back then, all we had was bottle drinks, so sorting bottle drinks to deposit bottles and all that stuff as a kid.
And how was that? Did you enjoy that? Was that fun, or did that seem like work when you were a kid?
Well, when I was young, it was fun. And then when I got to be a teenager, it became a pure dang prison. To be honest with you. Our family farmed. We had race horses, had a restaurant. My grandfather, as a hobby, raised everything you could think to raise.
Oh, wow.
From cows to chickens to peacocks, wild turkeys. All that stuff had to be tended to all the time. And so if you were a male in our family, your hind end was going to be working somewhere.
Did you work on the farm too?
Yeah, not so much on the Jones side of the family. And that was so weird. There was only one summer I remember helping out a little bit, farm related there.
Okay.
But my granddaddy on my mother's side of the family, when he retired from the government, he farmed what farmland he owned.
Okay.
And so I worked with him in the summertime.
Can you give me like a quick little history about Skylight Inn?
Yeah. So my grandfather, the late Pete Jones, mm-hmm. worked with one of his uncles, his mother's brother.
Okay.
At a kind of a meat and three cafe in Aden that also sold barbecue.
Okay.
That goes back probably longer than I can actually substantiate, to be right honest with you, as to how many generations it is. But at the age of about 16 or 17 years old, he started constructing Skylight Inn, okay. which at the time was an octagonally shaped building. It made absolutely no sense whatsoever. It was very, very small. Matter of fact, our front dining room now is still the original building.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that is. Okay, cool.
He simply did not want to demolish the original building when they added on to it. And so where they chopped the pork, if you see photos online where Mike's standing there at the cutting station, that was the original back door.
Oh, okay. Oh, interesting.
How small it was.
Yeah, it's not a huge space.
And so I think he opened at 18 or 19 years old. It was July of 1947 was when he opened the business.
And how did it do at the beginning? Was it a pretty big hit at the beginning?
Well, I'm going to say yes and no. It was a hit in the fact that it was a teenager running his own business. And so I've heard tons of stories from him and old timers of it being almost a pure dang joint.
Really?
But I mean, there's no rule of order. I've heard stories of my grandmother. The land that Skylight's built on is built there because that was the original family farm.
Okay.
And so the land was free. But I've heard stories of my great grandmother stepping out on the porch of the old home place and firing a shotgun in the air at 1 or 2 in the morning, telling them to shut it down.
And so it became a hangout, a big hangout.
It really was. And the stories of teenagers parking behind the place. And when he got into the late 50s, my father was born in 51.
Okay.
And my dad went through the whole family went through some tough times in the 50s. Mm-hmm. They had grown up poor anyway. My granddaddy's other two siblings and their families all lived with his mother and father in the early years.
Okay, wow.
My dad slept in a dresser drawer the first 2.5 years of his life.
That's incredible. Wow, I've heard stories like that. Yes. Wow, that's crazy.
Yes. And so my dad got ran over twice as a young child.
Like
once at like 4 or 5 years old. He fell out of a farm truck when he was 4 or 5 years old, and it crushed one side of him.
Oh, shoot.
And when he was 8 or 9 years old, my Uncle Jeff, who is still in business with us now, they were crossing the street from the home to the restaurant, and they were told to hold hands when you cross the road. That was the main highway then. Yeah. And my dad got hit by the car, and my uncle did not.
Oh.
And, yes.
Oh, my gosh. So he had issues ever since then, right?
Well, in those days, there was no ambulance. The hearse is what carried you to the hospital.
Oh, wow.
And so they didn't think he was going to make it through the night. And that, from what my dad said, was kind of the turning point in my granddad's life as to, hey, I'm not going to abide all this crap that's going on. And my granddad never drank. His father was a drunk. His father-in-law was a drunk.
But he never drank.
My granddad never drank alcohol. But he sold it trying to make a living.
That's so interesting. So did your father end up, what ailments did he, I've never met your father. Did he have, like, part of his body, was it hard to walk for him, or was it?
Oh, he was in a full body both times. The second time, when he actually got struck by the car, was life-threatening.
Okay.
They didn't even set his bones for the first several, I would say, from what I'm gathered, it was 3 to 5 hours of him getting to the hospital, that they didn't even fix anything because they didn't think he was going to live.
Oh, my gosh. That's remarkable. But your father worked at the restaurant.
Yes, he did. He started there in 1960.
Did he meet your mother at the restaurant?
That's a whole nother story.
Oh, that's a whole
My dad was also a partner in a gun shop.
Okay.
With a gentleman that I grew up calling my uncle, but he wasn't my uncle. It was just a real close family friend. And my dad sold his part of that business in the late 70s. But he met my mother via that business due to her first husband. And her first husband and my father and about 15 other guys in town, a couple times a year, especially around festival time, they had a place in town that had an old Western false front. It looked like a Western town, but it was just simply a facade.
Okay.
And these were grown men that would go out there and play cowboys. And I mean, literally, people would come from everywhere. Right on when I was a child, I remember it. And I mean, 1,000 people would be gathered in Aiden to watch these skits go on. But anyway, my mother's first husband passed of leukemia.
Okay.
And it was a few years later that he and my mom, I guess, connected in that way to realize they were sweet on each other.
Wow. And what did because I know the Skylight Inn did it wasn't iconic until when did it become iconic? Was it the '80s or the
when they got into the '60s was really when they transitioned over to only selling whole hog barbecue.
Okay.
Prior to that, he sold hamburgers, hot dogs, milkshakes, everything in addition to cooking whole hogs.
Gotcha.
But it wasn't sustainable was the problem. You just want enough mayonnaise to cover the bread. and so I don't, my dad would probably know better than I am. And I'm working on a book, so I should know this by now. But what year they actually transitioned to just doing that trio, pork slaw, cornbread. But it was sometime in the early 60s.
Okay.
And it was sustainable at that point in time. They were making a living out of it, as well as the farm had recovered, because those years in the 50s that I was just telling you about was also coupled with the farm not making any money at all.
Oh, no.
6 years in a row that they couldn't pay their bills. And my grandfather went to local businessmen and said, "Hey, I can't pay you. If you'll work with me, I'll be good for my debt." And he eventually paid his debt. And that's a whole nother story how I learned of that story, but I'm full of those. but anyway, I would say the late 70s was really when he kind of made a mark on the map. Okay. And National Geographic published a book called Backroads America.
Mm-hmm.
I think it published in 80 or 81.
Okay.
And it's funny now that I'm working on my book, because you can read what the guy wrote in that book, and never does he say what my granddaddy said he said.
Really?
Because all of my growing up, you know, it's the barbecue capital of the world. I mean, Jesus Christ, they built a rotunda on top of the place. But that was based on my granddad's interpretation of what published.
Oh, interesting.
Now, the conversation that he and the writer or whoever it was, the fact checker, may have been different than what ended up in print. But in print, it just simply said that they left there and didn't go anywhere else for barbecue.
Okay.
They didn't say it was the best. They didn't say it was the worst. but he came away from that with a little bass in his voice and chest thumping going on.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. But up there, that was, I would say, the first kind of crowning jewel. Gotcha. Where somebody recognized what our family had been doing for all those generations under the radar. And from that, my dad made a fun. He had heard about a bowl, a barbecue bowl that was going on in Washington. And it was basically a sparring of a representative from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Representative from somewhere down around Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay.
You know, just my barbecue is better than your barbecue type of deal. You know, it's all politics. It's BS anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But my family, bless their hearts, has always had a flair for the dramatic. And so my dad contacts this representative in Greensboro and is touting the same thing my grandfather is, which is, hey, we just got told we had the best barbecue in America by National Geographic. We need bowl. And they went up there and they won the bowl. They won the little spout off or whatever it was. There was, I don't know how many barbecue restaurants were there. They flew it there on a Cessna.
Oh, really? That's
a
so
pilot, crazy. My dad and my grandfather.
Oh, that's so funny.
Literally took off in Aiden, North Carolina, and flew to Washington, D.C. on a Cessna.
Dude, I wonder who in Greensboro, too. I wonder who was the, what?
I don't remember. I'm sure my father would the representative's name. But following that, it seemed like it picked up a little steam as far as media was concerned. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there was any restaurant in North Carolina in the 80s that probably had PR hired.
Probably not at all.
Especially specifically in eastern North Carolina, which is almost a forgotten land.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. But so into the late 80s, 90s. Were really, really good years for Skylight. The restaurant flourished. It made money. It made friends. It was able to kind of, I'm going to say, bask in some limelight of of a food that wasn't cool then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't hip.
You know, in the '70s and early '80s, pork was poison to everybody.
True.
Everybody thought it was gonna kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the old country song is, "I was country when country wasn't cool. We were barbecue folks when it wasn't cool."
That's a great takeaway. That's so
yeah.
It's
yeah,
so
I mean,
true. It's very true.
And that's one of the reasons that I didn't probably appreciate what we did for a living as a teenager, because I looked at it as a job instead of looking at it as a lifestyle.
True.
And when I say a lifestyle, it was in fact a way of life. It was the only way of life they had ever known was in and around barbecue. So now I'm the fourth generation that I can confirm that has lived their entire life with the presence of barbecue, never without.
That is so interesting. That's so amazing. That there's not many people that could say that.
That's been the primary source of income. It was, don't get me wrong, the farm subsidized it, especially in the early years. But for generations, I mean, our bread and butter, no pun intended, has been whole hogs in one form or the other.
And did you go to college and then come back?
So we get into my grandfather, and because anybody who knows me personally, I'm an honest man, and I don't stretch the truth. I don't mirror what is the truth. And my grandfather, looking back now, I didn't realize it. None of us realized it at the time. But my grandfather was about to outlive his good with our business. He had crossed the threshold, knowing what I know now. He had crossed the threshold several years before he passed of actually probably holding it back a bit.
Okay.
And when I say holding it back again, holding it back by not being open-minded. Let me cut this phone off. That's but okay. By not being open-minded and simply a lack of exposure. If I hadn't had the opportunity to travel and make friends and be a constant student, I'd probably be in the same boat we were in 20 years ago.
Interesting.
Looking through a real small looking glass.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got out of our business in 2004. I was in college at a local community college in an effort to transfer to East Carolina.
Okay.
And let's see, this was, I had returned about 98. I came back to the restaurant because I went to work for my dad's former business partner, actually, in another gun shop, in an effort just to get out of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I just hated it. I mean, hated it with a passion. And I think it was my first or second semester at college, I was able to write a paper on whatever I wanted to write it on.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, probably just seeing how smart or dumb I was the whole class. You know, hey, give me 10 pages on something. And just like every other college kid, I was thinking, what would be the least evasive in my life to put on 10 pages?
Mm-hmm.
Barbie, I got plenty of fuel.
You could write it for days.
Right. You know, I mean, I'll burn up 10 pages like it ain't nothing, go back to what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But in getting my facts together, I realized that that business and that hooking whole hogs over wood hadn't been a recent development for our family. And it hadn't been something that they took for granted. It hadn't been something they looked at as just, I go to work at this time and I get off at this time. It was simply a way of life. You did what you had to do. It didn't matter what time it was, early or late.
Mm-hmm.
If it had to be done, you went about it.
Okay.
Which is the nature of being self-employed in general.
Oh, for sure.
But especially in the restaurant business, and especially in the restaurant business that it seems like is a constant evolution. Here is a family that essentially stayed unchanged for decade after decade, doing the same thing. And a lot of people go out of business that way.
Oh, for sure.
By doing the same, Albert Einstein defined insanity as doing the same thing over and expecting a different result.
Uh-huh.
We are an anomaly to that. and when I say we've done the same thing, our principles are the same, but I heard this Saturday night in my new restaurant in Greenville, a guy said, "I'm going to tell you, I've eaten your family's barbecue a long time." He said, "The barbecue I ate tonight was the best I've ever had."
That's incredible.
It's the best compliment you can get. And what I told him was, is I said, my grandfather wasn't exposed to the things that I've been able to be exposed to.
True.
So he came from a generation of cheap, stretch a nickel just as far as you can stretch it, because that was the way they survived. And that thought process transcended over into the business, into the restaurant, into the farm. If he could say, if he could spend 50 cent instead of 55 cent, that's what he did. I mean, it's nuts to think about, but that was just their, that was the way they survived for all those years. And so in his mind, he didn't mind putting a 105-pound hog on a pit next to one that was 188 pounds because he got a deal on one of them, where I know now that that's going to be two completely different products.
Mm-hmm. Oh, without a doubt.
One's going to be cream, one's going to be crap. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Uh-huh.
And so what I was able to do is he passed and he got out of our business in 04.
Okay.
Essentially at that point in time, there wasn't a passing of the guard. I wasn't knighted. It was just, it's almost, I mean, it was me and my dad, my uncle, but for whatever reason, I became the guy at 20 years old. Wow. A place that's been in business since 1947 in 2004. I'm figuring it out with little to no direction. And it was only by the grace of the good Lord that we didn't just founder because so he gets out in 04. He passed in February of 06.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I think it was 19 months. In that 19 months, we heard the nicest compliments. We had cards sent in the mail wanting to let him know that they were thinking about him and they're praying for him. Let your granddaddy know. My daddy would hear. Let your daddy know.
Wow.
When he drew his last breath, it was on the front page of the newspaper, right on to Charlotte.
That's amazing.
Legendary barbecue master dead at 77. That was the headline. It was on all the local news. And I swear to the good Lord, it was like a light switch got flipped.
All of a sudden.
Because for 57 years, he had stood behind that counter. The majority of them smoking cigarettes at that counter.
Of course.
But he was a fixture. No different than a barbershop pole that spun. When it's not there no more, something feels different.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it was immediate. People were saying that the barbecue's not the same since Pete died.
Really?
I heard that. Family was going to sell the restaurant. They've already sold the restaurant. All these rumors circulated. And perception, unfortunately, is reality.
Of course.
And our sales declined to the tune of about 24-25%.
That's huge.
In the restaurant business, that is catastrophic.
Yes.
Is what it is.
True.
And we went through, and so that was 04. In 2005, the Jones side of the family, we all worked together every day.
Mm-hmm.
So we had minimal family get-togethers because we were together all the time. And my longtime girlfriend then worked for my grandparents in another business they owned. And so in 04, I ran Skylight the last 6 months of 04. We got to 04, there was some profit. In 05, first quarter wasn't good due to some road construction that shut the highway down in front of the restaurant. We go into the summer was when literally, so 2 weeks before Hurricane Katrina hit, which is when oil prices spiked,
mm-hmm.
My girlfriend I was chatting about, she and I had been talking about getting married. We were in a car accident, threw both of us out of the car, and it killed her.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, my gosh.
I was 24 and she was 22.
Oh my gosh.
That was August the 14th. December the 14th, my grandmother Jones, who I worked with all the time, she passed. My grandfather died 31 or 32 days after she did.
Oh my gosh.
6 months time, it was like
so much.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You just about hollowed out. You didn't have a tear to cry. I mean, you just had nothing. And on top of the fact, we're not making no money. And so that was that way in 05, 06, 07. And in 2007, our main smokehouse caught fire and burned. And that smokehouse, unless you have suppression in it, are not insurable. And so when it burned, we didn't have the money to fix it. And this is crazy thinking about a place that's been in business that long that you couldn't come up with $20,000 to put a roof and replace your electrical.
That is hard to get your head around, yeah, for sure.
It's just block walls. All we had to do was me and my uncle physically with our hands tore the roof off of it so we wouldn't have to pay nobody to do it. And then we finally hired some guys to go about replacing the roof. But in between that time was when I get a phone call from the Southern Foodways Alliance.
Okay.
And they wanted to send a man named Joe York out for a few days to shoot a little documentary film on us, which was not uncommon. It wasn't weird for us because we had enjoyed some media prior to that. And still were mentioned even then, even when we were struggling. It just didn't seem like it mattered. And so they came and shot their film. And that, I swear, I believe that was in 08. It was either 07 or 08.
Okay.
Either way, it was the summer of that same year. I get a call from John T. Edge. And at the time, I'd never spoken to him before. And he said, "We want to show that film at a thing called Big Apple Barbecue Block Party."
Okay.
He said, "And we'd like you to come to New York to do a little Q&A after we showed a film." Said, "Man, I'd be glad to go." Because I was also the one that went to accept the James Beard Award just in sheer glory of ignorance.
That's so funny.
And so we go back for Big Apple Barbecue, and I remember walking around Big Apple Barbecue thinking, how in the world do you get here in the barbecue business? I do not understand this. And I remember walking around and Chris Lilly, it was Pat Martin's first year. But all these guys that are now some of my greatest friends, I had pictures on my telephone of their rigs like they were just rock stars. I mean, it was just so far out of my thought process.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, of how does this work? And so that was in June. The gap was always in June. That fall, John T. calls me again, and he said, "Look, we did a dinner last year at Charleston Wine and Food, and it seemed to be pretty good. We'd like to do it again and show your film, showcase your food, and then we're going to have some chefs kind of work around you a little bit to fill the menu up." And up to that point, nobody in my family, as far back as you want to go, had ever been anywhere other than Aiden and cooked. Period.
Period.
And I remember sitting at my desk on the phone with him thinking, I'm telling him what he wants to hear, but in my mind, I'm going, "I'm not going to Charleston cook a hog." No. I mean, it just didn't make any sense to me. I didn't see a value in it.
Of course.
So I hung up with him, and literally, I didn't make a note. I didn't write anything down. I didn't make a star on the calendar. Nothing. I get a call in January from somebody with Charleston Wine and Food. And I was thinking, ooh, I did agree to do that. And I went trying to back out of it. John T. called me again. We chatted. And then Nick Pahakis of Jim and Nick's
Oh,
Barbecue.
yeah.
All right. That was the Jim and Nick's on King Street is where that event was held
Oh,
all the
interesting.
years. And he gets on the phone with me, and I didn't know him any more than I knew you. First time I called you, and he said, "Sam, what's the deal? This event's coming up in February. You told John T. you were going to do it," and I was like, "Yeah," and I'm trying to get out of it. And he said, "Well, I'm gonna call you back in a few weeks, and we're gonna need to set this thing up." And so he calls me back, and I'm right on trying to get out of it. And I don't even remember what stupid excuse I used. And he stopped and he said, "Seriously?" And I paused too. There was just silence on the phone. And I said, "Mr. Pahakis, I said, it's one thing for you to think I am just a damn fool and me stay in Aiden, North Carolina. I said, it's a whole different thing for me to drive to Charleston and prove you right. And he busted out laughing. And he was like, man, you just come down here. He said, I'm sure everything will be fine. And so I go down there, and I was just as nervous as a whore in church. And that sounds crazy to think that somebody that grew up being down and doing something would be nervous about being able to take it somewhere. But I sit at the table that night, and I walked in and sit down at Jim and Nick's, and it was me, Rodney, Pat Martin, John Hare, who's the owner there in Charleston, Nick, Drew Robinson, who was their corporate chef. And it seemed like within about 30 minutes, everybody had an opinion of when I should put this pig on, which did not help my current nerve situation.
Of course not.
And finally, I just pulled the ripcord, and I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to cook a hog on your grill, cooker, smoker, whatever you're calling it, and I'm going to do it just like I do it at home, and I'm going to be down here at 3:30 in the morning. Okay. And Rodney said, because Rodney had done that dinner the first year and was in the exact same position I was in.
Rodney Scott.
Rodney Scott was scared to death, and Rodney said, he said, Sam, I'll meet you down here. And so me and Rodney met at 3:30 in the morning on King Street and put that pig on. And Nick didn't want us to put the pig on until he was notified, because he wanted to come out and toast it with bourbon at 4 in the morning. And so we cooked that. Rodney sat out there with me all day. That was when Rodney and I got to really know one another for the very first time. And this was in 2010, I think it was.
Okay.
And now, of course, we have traveled the country together. From literally coast to coast.
Oh, that's so great.
So we cooked the pig, and I stepped inside because they had told me that they were going to show the film, and they wanted me to step inside when they showed the film. And I look back on that film now, and I'm a little embarrassed about the way I talked and how I carried myself. The thing, basically, it was a lack of knowledge. Or the presence of ignorance, whichever one
you want, whatever you want
to call it. Yeah, six of one and half a dozen of the other. But I remember when that film got to the part where it talked about my grandfather, and it showed a still image of him in his prime. And I caught myself with a little tear in my eye, because he would have never went to where I went that night. Because his fear would have probably overcome it. The desire to think something else could happen.
That's interesting.
He would have probably saw less value in it than I did, and actually saw a deficit in the fact that I won't be in the restaurant working.
True, get you away from it, yeah.
And so they showed that film, and it was planned for us to bring this hog in on a tray. And it was me and Rodney and John. I can't remember who the fourth person was. But when they opened the doors of that restaurant, these people that had paid $150 or $175 a ticket stood to their feet and applauded.
Oh, that must have been amazing.
And I thought, we have been cooking pigs a very long time, every day, to no applause.
So no standing ovation.
No applause. And so, to further capitalize on my ignorance at the time, on the menu that night, and I don't remember everybody's dishes, but I was the feature, which makes no sense, because on the line that night was Donald Link, Stephen Trajewski, Ryan Pruitt,
Whoa.
Sean Brock. Who am I missing? I think Pat had something on the menu. There's all these James Beard winning chefs, and then this guy from Aiden, Carolina, standing on the end of the line down there.
Oh, that's so amazing.
And literally that weekend was when Fatback Collective was born.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, wow.
That event was on a Saturday night. On Sunday night, we went to dinner at Monza in Charleston. And Nick stood up to make a toast, and he was standing at the head of the table, and he picked his wine glass up, and he started naming a few names, and Sean and Donald Link and Rodney Scott. And all of a sudden, there I was sitting, and he said, and Sam Jones. He said, you have to be a part of this. And I didn't know what he was talking about, but I thought, You know, I have enjoyed the company of these guys all weekend. Whatever it is, can't be bad.
No.
And that was where Fatback came from.
Oh, that's so... That
the original 12 people was born in 2010 at Charleston Wine and Food.
Oh, that's amazing. That's incredible.
And so that's where all those relationships started. And now those guys are literally some of my best friends in the world.
How great is that?
When we celebrated Skylight's 70th anniversary this year, I got emails in the Fatback chain from Billy Reed, the clothing designer, saying that he obviously wasn't going to be able to make it. And I only sent him an invite because I knew they'd be pissed with me if I didn't.
That's so funny. But I
was standing in the parking lot at Skylight that morning just doing some final instructions because we had a lot going on that day.
Yeah.
And I hear this voice that I'd heard so many times before, and he does this crap everywhere we go. Sam Jones, everybody, Sam Jones. I was thinking, it's Rodney Scott. Oh. Like, he had drove from Charleston to Aiden to be there.
How great is
for
that?
70. I have flown to Nashville before and only been there so I could wash my clothes at Pat Martin's house.
Oh.
I mean, I could just go down the list of friends that I've been able to make. Now everybody that was at Big Apple Barbecue then and now are some of my greatest friends that I could pick up the phone right now and call any of them. When I say the brightest people in barbecue, people that, you know, people aspire to be like.
Oh, they're my heroes. They're my rock stars in my life.
Right. And to me now, they were rock stars to me in 2008 and 2009. Now they're my friends because there's no gap that exists there that used to exist. Wow. We know each other. I'm supposed to go on a duck hunt with Tuffy and Chris Lilly sometime next month. Oh, that's we were all at dinner and John Tezar had us in at Knife in Dallas back in the spring. And it was me, Chris Lilly, Tuffy, Billy Durney, Daniel Vaughn.
Mount Rushmore of barbecue.
It was just Aaron Franklin was there. A ton of us.
And you belong there.
But it's crazy to think about it that way. And my business partner at a new restaurant worked with us forever at Skylight. I've known him since he was 14 years old. And now he gets it. But when he first started coming to some events with me, he was like, man, this is so stupid. These people think you're something special. You know, when somebody walks up with a book or a magazine or something and goes, can you sign this for me? And he would just look at me and go, like, I don't want to. Like, if I get you to sign something, it's going to be a check.
Oh, that's hilarious. So tell me about your new spot, about Sam Jones. And I want to let you know that the gray T-shirt with the yellow writing, the Sam Jones shirt that I bought, is easily the shirt I wear the most out of any shirt that I have. It's the quality. It's not that this is an important thing to talk about shirt quality, but it's a great shirt. People should buy that. I'll put a link in the. But tell me about your new spot.
Yeah, exactly. So we started planning that in about 2013. And Sam Jones Barbecue would not be there if it weren't for going to Charleston in 2010. Because it would, one, have been just a dream, almost a figment of my imagination in the desert, as opposed to actually thinking it could be reality. To be right honest with you. And if it weren't for the knowledge imparted to me, the encouragement from a lot of those people I just named, as well as many, many others, probably was the thing that kind of kicked me over the edge to actually do it. Because when you do something like that, if you have never ventured out, I think anybody that's ever opened a new restaurant that really stood to lose will tell you that it's the worst emotional roller coaster you'll ever go on in your life.
I can imagine.
You know, I mean, literally, and people would think, because my name means something to some people, would just think, well, of course he's going to do well. But there were days that I'd get up, and in my mind, I'd think, boy, we're going to do so good. And, you know, I just had this plan laid out, and there were days that I laid down thinking, you have wagered everything you've worked for your whole life on this. You put your family at risk. you know, the reality of if it doesn't do well, this is bad. Yeah. This is really bad.
Really bad.
Yes. As in, I lose my house bad. That kind of bad.
That's all the bad.
And fortunately, we opened up way past our projections. And it blew my mind, to be perfectly honest with you. At what we did when we opened, at literally no, we didn't advertise one iota. Wow. We put a sign in the ground that said, coming fall of 2015. And I don't say that arrogantly.
No,
at all. It's very humbling to know that I was able to make a name for myself inside. I was able to build a brand within a brand to some extent.
Interesting. Yeah,
and I didn't even realize that fully until the communications company that helped me brand the new restaurant made it apparent to me.
What differentiates this from Skylight Inn?
Well, obviously, it's a touch more modern. Mm-hmm. And when I say a touch, obviously, because it was built in 2015. Yeah. But I wanted to pay honor or pay a homage or tribute to my family and to Skylight, the institution. And at first, we had an idea of doing that architecturally, and we realized that it wasn't a good idea in 47. Mm-hmm. Dang sure ain't a good idea in 2015. And so we ended up employing an architect out of Colorado that was instrumental in helping me figure out what was bouncing around this big old fat head of mine and be able to sketch it out on paper. Mm-hmm. So we conceded not to do it architecturally and do it via photos, decor, the menu. There was a way to do it where we could bridge a gap from old school traditional to a newer school traditional.
That makes sense.
But I'm not that guy that's doing crazy things with meat. Mm-hmm. You're not going to hear about me, and I'm not putting off on the people who do, because geography defines barbecue a lot. And so, yeah, I mentioned Billy earlier. Billy can do things with meat in Red Hook in Brooklyn that I'd get just, there'd be somebody standing there with three nails, a cross, and a hammer ready to hang me up in North Carolina. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so I have to do what works. Exactly. You do what pays your bills. And we were able to do that. I did want to preserve a detached smokehouse because people don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know in my part of the country anybody that had built a smokehouse in 10 years.
That's sad.
It's very sad. And we were getting ready to do a food show here recently. And we were going, originally it was going to cover both restaurants. We were going to tape at Skylight a day, tape at Sam Jones a day. Mm-hmm. And they moved the dates around so many times, and I had my book, first photography round for my book lined up, and sure enough, they laid it on that weekend. And I said, fellas, I said, I can work with you on Sunday, but Wednesday through Saturday, I'm out. I'd already sent you my availability. Yeah. It worked out where we couldn't do Skylight, obviously, because they're not open on Sunday. And the producer asked me, where else should I go in Eastern North Carolina? Because a friend of mine was who had recommended me to this production company for this particular show anyway.
Okay.
So some value was put on my opinion without this guy even knowing me. Mm. And I thought about it and I said, man, I said, I know you don't know me and I'm not that guy that wouldn't refer you to a good barbecue place. Just because it's not mine, I'm not going to say that they suck.
Yeah.
I said, but it's sad that I'm sitting here thinking right now and you're probably thinking I am that guy. I said, Eastern North Carolina used to be dotted with places mm-hmm. that was holding the standard. Mm-hmm. You know, on a battlefield, there's a standard bearer back in the day.
Yeah.
He held the standard. And if it fell, somebody else picked it up.
Exactly.
And for years, people have been dropping it nonstop in Eastern North Carolina, and nobody's picked it up.
That's so sad.
Nobody's picked it up. Places... The place I referred him to, that gentleman's 82 years old, and he will tell you if you walked in there to buy a sandwich today, that when he dies, that's it. It's gone. It never opened again.
That's a shame.
And those gems like that have gone by the wayside, or it's been a successional change and they've screwed it up.
Yeah, and then it's not open anymore because of that.
Exactly. And fortunately for me, I didn't reinvent the wheel. We're cooking hogs just like we did 15 years ago. The difference is they're better hogs. They're more consistent.
That's very true.
Right. Our processes are much better. Neither restaurant possesses a freezer. Even Sam Jones with the menu I have, no freezer.
No freezer at all. Wow, that's incredible.
And I mean, but it's not a yarn we spin. You shouldn't have to put pit smoked on your sign to convince somebody that it's pit smoked.
No.
If you pull a good rule of thumb, if you pull up or walk into a barbecue joint and you don't smell smoke,
Oh, yeah.
I would exit.
I agree. I've always told people.
We had a review on Skylights. I'm trying to think what platform it was, but the people that take care of that and respond to all of it, I still like to see them before they responded to. And I was breezing over them. I think they sent them to me on Mondays or Tuesdays, and I was breezing over them. I saw this guy that so conclusively, so definitely said their barbecue's crap. They cook it with gas. And I mean, he just went down this list. And so I said, I tell you what, I'll respond to that one. And because it's not about making somebody right or wrong, it's about making somebody aware of the
Aware
facts.
of that, yeah.
And the facts are that there's about 55 cords of firewood sitting behind Skylight right now that cost a ton of money. And if I was going to lie about cooking with wood, there's a cheaper way to do it than
Yeah,
buying 5 cords of wood.
and faking it, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's too funny.
Yeah.
So, so people that might not know, what are you serving at Sam Jones? Is it what's on your menu? It's
So it's not, it seems like it's going to be a big menu in comparison to Skylight, but it's not when you think about it in comparison to other restaurants. So Skylight, literally from the 60s until about 2006, served cornbread, coleslaw, whole hog. That was it.
That
If you came looking anything other than one of them three things, you, sir, were going to be disappointed. It was a not what you wanted, it was how much of said quantity. How much of
was a
this do you
specific
want?
thing, yes.
That's it. And so we had always catered through Skylight, and we always offered chicken when we catered. It was never on the menu. And I'd added it a couple of days a week at Skylight. God, it was probably 5 or 6 years before we opened a new restaurant. Now it's every day. The only reason for adding it a couple of days was because of my dad. My dad is so old school, he's so opposed to change that I'm surprised my two sisters didn't have the same name. I mean, that man is just,
Oh, so funny.
he's the only guy I know in 2017 that has a flip phone, and that flip phone stays in his truck. He uses it less than 10 minutes a month.
Oh, that's so funny. That's my dad would be similar if he was alive right now.
Yes. If he had to talk to you via this method right here, he'd be dead and
Never.
gone for you right now.
I'd have to come and show and set it up and fly back home.
That's right. Anyway, so our menu essentially consists of just a few proteins. Pork. So we're doing whole hog, just like we do it in Aiden, no different. Spare ribs. We're doing a rub style chicken. My business partner I mentioned earlier that worked with us all through high school and college, he developed a rub that I actually made fun of him about
Oh, interesting.
when he kind of got back into food, and it was via going to some events with me. He built a pit at his house, and he was always busting my chops about me not cooking when I'm at home. And I said, man, when I'm at home, the last thing I want to do is cook.
Exactly.
But he had developed this rub, and it was really good. I just wouldn't let him know it was really good, because just like you would your friends, you compliment them with sarcasm.
Exactly.
And so I always would pick on him and say, man, how did royalties off of that rub going? But when we got ready to open, when I offered him to, I wanted him to be my partner because he's one of my best friends in the world. But I mean, it was a no-brainer. We were going to use that rub, and that's so our chicken is two different chickens at the two restaurants. Okay. Skylight is just a unadulterated whole chicken put on a pit, cooked over wood. Ours over here is just rubbed. Is the only difference.
Gotcha.
We brine and rub it, and so you got that. We do a smoked turkey. Mm-hmm. I don't say I have the best of anything, and it might not be a record. But it's a dang good average.
Okay.
And I was completely 100% opposed to selling turkey when we were working on the menu until we put one at Skylight. Because when I think of turkey, I'm thinking of my grandmama's turkey at Thanksgiving.
Of course.
Where you need a quart of gravy to be able to get it.
So dry. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Just awful. And when we cooked it, it didn't turn out that way. It was super moist, tender, everything you want. And a piece of meat was in that turkey breast. And so we do that, and then I do a burger as a throwback to
the old days of
selling hamburgers and hot dogs.
Oh, that's
and
so
it's fresh beef seasoned, and then it comes with mayo, mustard, you know, your classic burger top.
And then what sides? You have coleslaw, obviously, right?
Coleslaw, potato salad, which is my grandmother's potato salad. We do a baked bean that is a kind of a hybrid between my great uncle and me. He had a baked bean recipe when he cooked in the National Guard way, way back. And he would always cook it on special occasions.
Okay.
Like if we were having a gathering somewhere, you could always count on my Uncle Gerald to bring beans.
That's amazing. That's wonderful.
But I didn't ever think he put enough meat in them. So when we were working on this recipe, we ended up changing some of the quantities. I changed the way he was making what I called a bean sauce. Mm-hmm. He was making a barbecue sauce to go in this baked beans, and I ended up just using the barbecue sauce I developed for the new restaurant, me and Michael, to go in, and it turned out really well. And so it's actually got beef in these baked beans.
Oh, interesting.
Which is people talk trash to me about them in the culinary community or joke on me until they eat them. And try them one time. You won't talk so much trash about them.
I can't wait to try.
And then we do homemade mac and cheese. Where we make the roux, do the whole nine. Coleslaw, obviously.
Yeah.
And we've just started in the last few months doing collards. And it took us a long time to dial this recipe in because there's nothing on that menu that's half done. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that's fast on that menu. Everything takes time. It takes a human being that cares to follow the procedure and make this food.
Gotcha.
And I tell people locally when they ask me why my prices are what they are, I tell them that we don't buy food. We buy ingredients and we make food.
Yeah.
Which is a difference
in
a lot of barbecue restaurants. There's a lot of barbecue restaurants. Ours suffered from this at one point in time, probably, that are riding off of past laurels. They're riding off of a title.
So many are.
Decades ago, and now they're doing a terrible job, and nobody wants to tell them.
Mm-hmm.
Where we try to be true to ourselves. If I'm not doing a good job, I want somebody to let me know, and so I can correct it. I don't want to keep sucking. Nobody wants to be bad.
Some people don't care, maybe, or something.
I mean, the coleslaw that we've served for 70 years, I found myself about a month ago, 2 days I spent working on that recipe again.
Interesting.
Just where, in my opinion, it had gotten convoluted. And some people had interpreted the recipe in ways other than it was intended. And so I went in, I made it myself. I mean, I did everything you could think to do with four ingredients. That's all that's in that slaw.
Uh-huh.
But what I told our staff was, I said, you may think that I'm a dummy because I have spent 2 days doing something that I've done my whole life. I said, but I wanted to do it instead of tell you. I wanted to show you so you would know how important it was to me.
And you could impart that on them.
And if our coleslaw is that important to me, think about everything else.
True. Oh, without a doubt.
And it goes right down to, we make our salad dressings at a new restaurant.
Whoa.
Ourselves. And there's a lot of attention paid to every detail we possibly can. not to try to bridge barbecue into fine dining. That's not the case at all. I'd rather not even have to wait on your table, to be perfectly honest. I enjoy chatting with people, but we made the new restaurant a little too nice. We still wanted to have that fast casual, but we essentially weren't planning on having people on the floor all the time.
So it is the service. Okay.
Yeah, but when we opened, the guests demanded it. Gotcha. You know, we were getting, everybody was mad when we first opened. The staff, me, guests, everybody was pissed. Because there were some things we were figuring out.
Yeah, yeah.
And which now they're figured out. And,
are you open every day except for Sunday?
No, we're open 7 days at the new restaurant.
Okay, okay.
And we serve beer, which was another big one in Eastern North Carolina.
Yeah, no, that's a huge thing.
Yeah, there was a lot of nails and crosses and hammers that wanted to be taken out. Just because, if I'm not mistaken, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, but I want to think I was the first barbecue restaurant east of Raleigh to have beer. And I know for a fact it was the first multi-generational barbecue person.
Would you say Raleigh? Were you saying Ed Mitchell's place? Is that probably the...
Ed, I know the pit serves alcohol, and that's why I say Raleigh, but...
Yeah, that's something.
You know, I'm a third generation in that business, and so regardless of what I do, I'm still looked at as skylighting.
Of course.
I've just been able to inadvertently build a name for myself under that flag. Mm-hmm. And there's a section in our paper in the Greenville, North Carolina newspaper, and in Greenville, North Carolina, it's about 100,000 people, called Bless Your Heart. Uh-huh. And I'm sure it was meant for more good than bad. You know, in my opinion, it should be Bless Your Heart to the guy that gave me $2 I was short at the grocery store line.
Yes.
Not Bless Your Heart to the dirty slut that you. It's like if you say Bless Your Heart, it absolves you of any wrongdoing. You can say whatever you want to.
That's funny.
And I was in the Bless Your Heart for like 5 or 6 weeks straight. Because this is just people writing in.
Yeah.
And Bless Your Heart to all the barbecue places in Pitt County that don't serve beer.
Really?
Oh, man. I had one lady drive through the drive-thru. She double parked in the drive-thru, asked if I was in. And we had tons of people when we opened sending us cards, flowers, and coming in and congratulating us, even if they weren't eating. And people would come through the drive-thru and ask if I was in, you know, while they were getting their food. And I'd stick my head out and say hello because I enjoy talking to people. And I stuck my head out this time thinking it was going to be the same thing. And this lady's double parked. And I said, how you doing today? With a smile on my face. And she said, in so many words, that she was just letting me know that I was going to hell.
See, people don't understand that. People from across the country wouldn't understand that.
Because of that demon juice that was going to be pumped out of my building in there.
Wow. That is crazy. That's amazing.
But, I mean, that's the truth.
Of course. And no, that's the kind of
passion. My dad wouldn't go in my restaurant for 3 months. Whoa. It took him 3 months to go in there because he's a Baptist preacher.
Yeah, yeah. And that makes sense.
I respect his opinion, his conviction.
Yeah, I respect that, too.
I respect it 100%. I just don't share it 100%.
Yeah.
And he'll come in and eat now and hang out or whatever. He still ain't happy about it. But it just is what it is.
It most definitely. Well, Sam, I just appreciate you taking the time and your stories. We could talk for another 2 hours, and I would love to. I'm hoping to go to Sweden. I was talking to Johan, and he invited me to come out when you guys are there because that sounds like an amazing trip. And
I can tell you one thing. I don't know what we'll teach you as far as barbecue is concerned, but if you can be around me and Pat Martin and Billy Durney and Wayne Miller and not have a good time, you simply suck at life.
No, those are all amazing humans, and I just appreciate everything you're doing and the legacy and your passion and your honesty. You're just, I can't wait to meet you in person, and I hope to be able to get out there in a couple months.
Yeah, man. I look forward to it.
Thank you. You have a great day. Have a Merry Christmas, too. Happy New
You
Year.
too, man.
All right.
Enjoy.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one.